Let's invite Elise Glink in now, the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Happy Monday, Elise.
Thanksgiving week.
Yeah, we're going to have a good Thanksgiving week here, and I wish the same for you. Let's start with this OpenAI story. Sam Altman, the CEO, fired or quit, but now back. What's his status?
You know, it's interesting. Sam Altman has landed as in the newly created job of head of AI for Microsoft, not a small job, where they're going to build an entire division around him, I think, and the former president of OpenAI. Just for everybody to remember, OpenAI is the company that introduced something called ChatGPT. That was about a year ago, believe it or not. The world has pretty much shifted in that time. And then there have been some other competitors that have come to the forefront. And Sam Altman, who comes out of a great San Francisco startup tradition and culture and has worked for some very, very big companies, has traveled the globe. People have referred to him as the AI ambassador. And one of the things that was really shocking is that somebody who seemed to be so successful in creating such a big company, a company that, by the way, has attracted over $15 billion in contributions or investment, could be fired summarily, like within a very, very short period of time. And so over the weekend, the board...
But wait right there. And, yep. And the reason that they said that they let him go was because they said he wasn't being candid with the board and not so candid that they can do what the board has oversight. If the CEO isn't telling you what's happening, then you could be held responsible for something maybe that's going wrong in the company. I'm not suggesting that it was, but that's, you know, just an obvious reason why you have to have a candid relationship with the person that's doing the day-to-day operations. And they let him go. So you wonder, well, what is it that he's not being candid about? And I don't think we've heard, have we?
We have not. What we have heard is that it's nothing to do with the operation of the company, nothing to do with the finances, nothing clearly to do with the product. So whatever it was that he wasn't being candid about, that has not been revealed. But it's been telling that there's been a huge revolt and that the employees have been pushing to bring him back. And in fact, some 500 of the 750 total employees signed a letter, including one of the board members who is also one of the leaders of the company who helped fire him, signed this letter also saying, if you don't bring him back, we're all quitting. Stunning.
None of that sounds good then. Maybe it's best that this guy is in place, but it does sound like there's something else going on here. And, you know, this idea that you have these charismatic leaders that people love, that can be a good thing, but it also just makes me a little suspicious given what's happened at places like WeWork or Sam Bankman-Fried, Bankman-Fried. You know, there are instances where you go, wow, we love this guy, and wow, he's got the world by the tail, but maybe we need to just step back a little bit, you know?
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, this is, you know, some of the concerns that have been coming out is that this is world-changing technology. This fundamentally changes things. And there are people like Elon Musk who helped start OpenAI who have said, you know, this is crazy stuff and it could take over humanity and, you know, kill us all, right? He's always sort of out there with his
language. If Elon doesn't do it first, yeah, but keep going.
Yes, correct. But, you know, these are voices that are leaders in technology and we should listen to them and listen to what they're saying and try to put some balance into it. But what I think kicked this off is when Sam Altman started talking about profits and revenue sharing and opening up the ChatGPT store, because millions of people are using this. And clearly, there's a huge profit motive. Even though OpenAI was started as a not-for-profit, which I don't know that everybody realizes, the whole goal of OpenAI was, we're going to build something that's safe and reliable. And safety in AI is a very big, important issue. And so when you start opening it up to the world and you see how quickly this has caught on everywhere, I think that the board got a little bit worried about whether this was going to be the big profit store, right, or if this was going to be done carefully, thoughtfully, mm-hmm. and protective of the mission.
Anything else you want to say about Sam Altman before we move on?
That it's really important to think about where this whole ChatGPT thing is going. And there are a lot of jobs that will be changing specifically because of this. So getting it right now, right when we're in the beginning, is so very important. So if Altman's not the right person to carry forward on that mission, great. But I do hope that we find somebody who is able to steer that company in the right direction.
We've talked about the K-shaped recovery or the pandemic itself, and I think this is maybe an example of that, maybe not, but 60% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, 6-0, paycheck to paycheck. And yet there is a population of people that are doing quite well, are certainly comfortable. And one of the reasons, according to the Wall Street Journal, is... You want to finish that sentence? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do, John. It's super interesting. So there was the story in the Wall Street Journal last week that indicated that, you know, the economy could be booming because of inheritances. And there's a certain percentage of adults, right, maybe 40% that seem to be doing really well, that K-shaped recovery. 60% are living paycheck to paycheck. 40% consider themselves worse off than they were a year ago. Right. And so there's been a lot of talk in amongst economists or people like me who are armchair economists, wondering why it is that the economy is so strong when people feel like they're so broke. And, you know, this answer about inheritances, really pushing it kind of looks at the same sort of data that we saw a few weeks ago when they said seniors were the ones propping up the economy. Seniors are more likely to get an inheritance than anybody else, right? Which makes sense. Your parents are maybe in your 90s, 80s, 90s, or 100s, and you're in your 50s and 60s. And so this is the time of your life you're most likely to get an inheritance as you're going into your senior years as a 60-something. And so when you think about how much some of those people are getting, it could explain or start to explain why the level of buying, the consumerism that we're seeing, continues.
Yeah, well, we've understood of late, as you said, that it's the older folks who have more money, and rather than leaving it for the kids, are spending it, although obviously some are. But just to go back to that story, the average American has inherited, as of 2022, the average American has inherited $58,000. But that's if you include the majority whose total lifetime inheritance is zero. So if most folks are getting zero and the average is 58, then I guess the people who are getting anything are getting a lot more than 58, right?
That's right. So the average for everybody who actually is getting an inheritance, and by the way, I think it's like 1 in 5 people last year got an inheritance. It's not a small number. But if you did inherit something, the average was about $266,000. And if you look at people who are inheriting in their 70s, it's $344,000. And that's just at the time of the gift, right, of the inheritance. You add in inflation. We've had big returns. I think we heard in the news that it's up 10% this month alone. And by the time you actually get there, you're getting even more money. But we're also seeing wealthier people set up and continue to help children or even adult children who may have their own children. We're still seeing millennials who are, I think there's something like 26 or 27% of millennials who are being helped financially by their parents. And so there's money that's coming down that's not being earned that I think is helping to support the economy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And don't even get me started on the gig workers, because I think there's an entire push that's happening kind of off the record books for people who are earning money on the side, either through, you know, their OnlyFans account or something similar, or they're making money on some of these other, gig worker sites.
Yes. Say an Uber driver. When I think of gig workers, I don't think of OnlyFans, although I guess income is income. And what are you inferring here, though, that so I wouldn't call any of that wealth, but there are reserves of cash that people have and are willing to spend that maybe isn't so apparent?
Yeah, I think there. I think if you look at the number of people who have side hustles or second, we used to call them second jobs, right? There's a lot of people now. Almost more than two thirds of the country have a second or a side hustle, second job. And I think whether it's large or small, you're driving an Uber on the side or not. It's really interesting to see how many people who have jobs that you think would be enough mm-hmm. to support them who mm-hmm. are actually taking these side jobs. I took an Uber the other day, John. This guy is a doctor in an emergency room. I said, why are you driving an Uber? And he said, who doesn't like to have a few extra bucks?
Wow. Elise Glink, Think Glink Media. You can just kick on thinkglink.com or Best Money Moves. Elise, let's talk next week. Happy holidays.
Thank you, John. You too.
Jim Dahlke joins us again, national editor at American Inno. You can always click on chicagoinno.com. Hi, Jim. Happy holidays.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, makes you think turkey. This is a chicken story, though, isn't it? Tyndall? What company is Tyndall?
Yeah, Tyndall is a plant-based chicken company. So this is a firm that opened its Chicago headquarters in 2022, and the food tech company is doubling down on Chicago. So it launched initially in the Hatchery, which is a really cool kind of kitchen co-working space where lots of restaurant tech firms can kind of go and use kitchen space and have access to kind of all the space you need to kind of create, you know, your food tech business or your food business. They are growing that location. So they are going into a larger location, which is in the West Loop, which is about 10 times bigger than the space it had at the Hatchery. It looks to expand its product rollout nationwide. And so this has helped it create essentially kind of like a bunch of different products that use plant-based chicken, all including its breakfast sausage. And it has its clients kind of all over the country. So it's an interesting company, right, looking to grow here in Chicago. We've talked, you know, here on this program often about how Chicago wants to be kind of a leader in the food startup and food tech world. And, you know, a nice vote of confidence here as this business looks to grow out of Chicago operations.
Yeah. I'm so intrigued by all the alternatives to traditional meat as we know it, either plant-based or maybe something grown in a laboratory that I guess would have the DNA, if you will, of meat, but it's not from a live chicken. Both of those are happening, right?
They are. And, you know, it's been interesting to follow. You know, some of the leaders in the space, you know, have struggled to at times to kind of gain consumer, you know, interest. You know, Beyond Meat is sort of the poster child of some of this, and it you know, has sort of struggled as stock prices dipped. And, you know, it is not exactly certain, you know, where this industry is going, though there is certainly interest in it. I don't know that we've seen one player absolutely nail it right out of the gate, which I think potentially opens up an opportunity for others to get into this space and kind of continue to see more mass adoption. This is not exactly new. You know, vegetarians have been eating sort of, you know, fake meat for years and years and years, right? But I think what we're seeing is companies are taking closer stabs at mimicking the taste and the texture to traditional meats. And, you know, time will tell if consumers will continue to want to put this as part of their diet.
Well, maybe it'll be a slow march, but it does seem to me like that's the direction that our tastes or appetites are going. But, you know, it's about the texture. It's about the taste. It's about the queasiness of where it came from. Like, is it something grown in a lab, or is it just something plant-based, which will always seem to be a compromise? Like, okay, that's healthier, but I'd rather have a chicken. And it just seems to me like they got to get it in the gullet of more people like me. I think we will be persuaded in time.
I think so, too. And I think one place to start, you know, is sort of the fast food route. Like, you know, when you put enough, you know, secret sauce and ketchup and mustard and tomato and
yeah, right.
I mean, you kind of dress it up to the point where you can kind of disguise it. It's a little harder maybe when you're kind of cooking with meat at home, you know, in a dish you're putting together, a casserole, and, you know, some of those flavors are a little more forward. And so it's a little trickier, right? So, I think that there is some opportunity to really nail this at the fast food angle. But, again, it's going to have to be up to the consumers to say, hey, this is something I like. This is a flavor that I enjoy. And I also enjoy the sustainability element of it as well.
Yeah, well, that last part is really important. And I don't know if that's what you need to focus on or the first part. It would seem to me, and I thought I read somewhere, that there was a Mexican food chain. It was Taco Bell or somebody like that. And they were introducing a plant-based meat. And if it was, you know, pieces of chicken or ground beef in a taco that you're replacing with all of the toppings you're talking about, I think that would be perfect, don't you?
I do, and you might not even notice it. That's exactly right. You know, so I think if you can get the taste pretty close, you know, mixed in with all the other sort of condiments and toppings, that you know, you might be able to confuse a consumer that might not know otherwise, and now is eating something that's potentially healthier and better for the environment.
A global supply chain startup is looking to expand its Midwest presence next year. Your Alex Zorn is writing this. What's this story?
Yeah, this is a company called Caddi, C-A-D-D-I. They recently raised about $90 million in new funding. This is a business that launched in Tokyo in 2017. It's actually led by a former engineer at Apple and a McKinsey consultant. They chose Chicago as their U.S. location, and so their headquarters stateside is here in the U.S. after launching in Tokyo in 2017. Their headquarters is in downtown Chicago now. They have a pledge to add 100 jobs here in the city over the next year and a half. And, they've got about 600 employees globally now. So this is a supply chain startup using some AI in some interesting ways, and what they're doing here is, you know, kind of noticing that Chicago really is, you know, the place to build their supply chain business. You know, kind of like we mentioned, often we note that Chicago is a city that really sort of leans into its food tech talent, really wants to be a food tech city. Chicago also really wants to be a supply chain city, a logistics tech city. There's a lot of logistics momentum here. A lot of firms have set up space here. And, you know, Caddi really believes that, hey, you know, we think that there's enough talent here in Chicago to really make this city our U.S. location. So they're going to continue to grow here in Chicago. And it's, you know, only continued good news for the local logistics tech sector.
Well, are they a warehouse company or just software to help companies operate more efficiently?
Yep, software to help companies operate more efficiently.
Chicago fintech startup. Tell me about this story.
Yeah, new fundraising for a company called CFX Lab. They raised a little over $9 million. Interesting business. They are working to help migrants send money home in a cheaper and faster way. So, you know, really their whole business model is around helping, you know, somebody, for example, you know, a Mexican migrant worker who's working a blue collar job, think food service, lawn care, construction. You know, many of those workers send a large portion of their earnings each year back home across the border to Mexico. And, you know, there's a lot of red tape for some of that. It takes a long time. There's fees. What CFX really wants to do is make this process easier for those workers. And actually their whole business model is set up around creating, you know, brick and mortar locations in the U.S. where folks can go, think your CVS or your Walgreens, we might be able to walk in there and send money home really within minutes rather than, you know, days or however long it takes for the traditional route there. So, you know, another $10 million for this startup here. Got some really interesting investors behind them. Decasonic, which is a Chicago blockchain investor, Corazon Capital as well, CMT Digital. So some well-known folks in the investment space here in Chicago are putting their money behind this company, which has got a really interesting business model.
They can't Venmo the money?
You know, cross borders is tricky. You know, once you're dealing with, you know, sending money not just domestically but across the border, it's not quite as simple as that. And so, what these guys say is, you know, they've got a better way to do it, and you know, it makes that transaction much quicker and even cheaper as well.
Hmm. And I suppose it also has to be translated into another currency then too, right? Whatever the market rate is, et cetera.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So there's a lots of hoops to kind of jump through there. And so, you know, potentially a very interesting market to jump into for this company and a, you know, what they believe and their investors to believe, a lucrative one as well.
Jim Dalkey's the national editor at American Inno. Hey, Jim, thank you very much. Let's visit next week as well.
Yeah, sounds good. Happy holidays. Thanks, John.
You too. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based McDonald's is increasing its stake in China. It's buying back Carlyle Group's minority stake in the partnership that runs McDonald's in China, including Hong Kong. The buyout price hasn't been disclosed. As part of the deal, McDonald's increases its stake from 20% to 48%. A Chinese conglomerate will still hold a 52% stake. China is now McDonald's second largest market. The number of locations there has more than doubled since 2017 with 5,500 stores. Cranes is out with its new list of Chicago's largest hospitals, and there's a new number one. Rush University Medical Center took the top spot away from Northwestern Memorial Hospital. Rush did it by pulling in 7% more net patient revenue from 2021 to 2022. Northwestern was at number one for the past 3 years. University of Chicago Medical Center came in at number three. The top hospitals on the Cranes list saw net patient revenue rise 9% during the period. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
We've got the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Hi there. Thank you. Bare Naked Ladies are helping us out today, and we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox.
If I had a million dollars.
Do you remember this song from 1988?
I do.
Kelly O'Connell, the CEO of Nourishing Hope, and she has the rare opportunity to say what she would do, not if she had $1 million, but with $1 million.
I would serve a lot more people in Chicago.
Nourishing Hope was awarded the $1 million by the Northern Trust Foundation, its first ever $1 million anchor award, and Kelly says the money will be put to work helping feed needy Chicagoans, especially those of a certain age.
Northern Trust's philanthropic focus is really Chicago's south and west sides, and they largely focus on 16 to 24-year-olds. So through this grant, we will serve more 16 to 24-year-olds through our online market.
Tell us more about that.
It's a neat alternative to coming into a traditional food pantry. It's a first of its kind of its city where people can order groceries online and then pick them up at their convenience. You can pick them up at one of our sites or one of our partner sites, and through the investment of this grant, we'll be able to expand those partner sites.
Wow. How about that? $1 million. That's a lot of money. I guess it means Nourishing Hope does not need your donations anymore. No. She says, unfortunately, food insecurity is the worst it's ever been, and demand for Nourishing Hope's services is the highest it's ever been.
I just want to send a message to our donors and volunteers and community that we still need the regular investment to support our annual operating fund, which fuels the work, fuels the mission, allows us to sustain the service levels that we have, which is about 20% up from last year.
And volunteers are especially needed through the holidays.
All kinds of volunteers. We need volunteers to help pack food, organize food, sort food, hand out food, you know, sort of distribute food. They can help pick and pack our orders in the online market. But we have volunteer opportunities 6 days a week at 4 sites in the city.
You can find out more at nourishinghopechi.org. From the farm to your belly, today's National Peanut Butter Fudge Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Alicia Scruba joins us now, marketing and business development person at 900 North Michigan Shops on Michigan Avenue. It's Small Business Saturday right around the corner, Alicia. I guess that's you guys, huh?
It is awesome. We are so excited for it.
It's funny, though, because that's... Is that considered the Gold Coast? I mean, that's fine shopping there in Chicago, which I don't think people think of when they think of small businesses.
They don't. Yeah, no, it's interesting. We are up, we have 80% local shoppers here, and half of our building is almost local businesses. Everyone knows this is, quote unquote, the Bloomingdale's building. Yes, we have Gucci and Max Mara and Club Monaco, but we have phenomenal local retailers that have been with us for so long, and they're really the depth of our building. So while we're on Michigan Avenue, I think that really this small businesses is what shines here.
So the shops at 900 North Michigan Avenue, how do people do that? You mentioned, what did you say, 80% are local shoppers?
Yeah.
I presume you meant shops, like those are local shops. Where are the shoppers from?
Oh, Chicagoland. So 80% of our shoppers are based in Gold Coast, Lincoln Park, Old Town, Wicker Park. We really have a local shopper that really makes us who we are. 40% of our shops are local brands.
Well, how do people do it then? I mean, so if it's local, are they just walking, Ubering, public transportation? How do they park if they're coming from Naperville?
So, yeah, you can go ahead and park at 900 North Michigan. We can validate your parking. You spend $10, and it's only $10 parking. A lot of people will Uber here. It's a great experience, especially through the holiday. We've got Santa here. Our tree is up. We just lit it. A lot of people don't know that We also have an all-mall liquor license, so people can come if they're Ubering especially and walk through the mall and enjoy some holiday spirits.
That is a new trend, isn't it? Towns are doing that. I didn't know that malls or, you know, shopping complexes were doing that.
Yeah, we found that people just want to have a glass of wine. They're going shopping. So it really increases kind of the local vibe that we want to give off here at 900. So the community loves it. They have fun. The kids can go to the toy shop. The parents, you know, it's back to that community feeling that I think a lot of community centers are missing. That's really what we think of ourselves here at 900.
Well, if they can do it at Mariano's, they ought to be able to do it there. So
exactly,
the sound of that. And then do you have any, you mentioned Santa, et cetera. Is Saturday a big day? And what's that going to look like?
Yeah, Saturday is a great day. The nice thing about 900 is it's kind of an escape from the avenue. Michigan Avenue is always hustling and bustling, especially during the holiday. I think that in the season, people can come here and kind of relax. Definitely busy. It's vibrant. Santa's here. People are taking pictures by the Christmas tree. But then we have so many local retailers who have interesting brand experiences. You can pop into shops that have little tastings of items. Strelitzhab's got their cooking classes going on. We've got candle making classes happening. And so there's just a lot happening over all six levels of our mall.
When we talked about this place, and I think it was earlier this year, we talked about how viable it is, how robust the shopping has been there, despite everything that the city or retail shopping in general has gone through. Catch me up on how business has been.
Yeah, so we're 98% occupied right now, which is kind of a real estate phenomenon, especially in retail. We've really worked hard to, for lack of better words, love our local retailers and our nationals. You know, they're such caring people, and they give so much to this building. We want to give back to them. So I really think there's just been a lot of, it's kind of like a microcosm of humanity, right? We really want to connect with them, and I think that resonates to our retailers, which then resonates to the community and our shoppers. And you can just feel different when you walk into 900. It's just a different feeling that people just really enjoy, and I think that's made the difference here.
So the landmarks around it are the Four Seasons Hotel. You mentioned Bloomingdale's. Is Bloomingdale's the anchor? Is that the big store there?
Exactly, yeah. It takes up six floors of kind of the backside of our mall. Gucci and Max Mara, Mont Blanc are at the front, and we're kind of kitty-corner to Water Tower and the Hancock.
I suppose maybe being inside gives people an added feeling of security when they go shopping.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and especially because the weather is better. We joke around that every day is beautiful in 900, but it really is, especially during the winter months when you're store hopping in any of the neighborhoods. It can get kind of crazy, and it's nice at 900 that you can kind of cruise through. I think definitely think there's an element of safety that people feel by going up and down. It feels good in here, and I think that just resonates with a lot of people.
So this Saturday, a small business Saturday, all the shops will be open, probably with some specials, I presume, or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone's got individual things happening. So as you cruise through each floor, I do encourage everyone as you walk through. There's it's kind of like walking through your favorite neighborhood. As you go level to level, you kind of feel a change. It gets more local. There's different things happening. It's just a flavor of different jewelry that you typically can't find in your common areas. Even though, like I said, I mentioned the candles, everything that we have here just is an artisan type feeling, but still high end, but approachable. It's just very, very different.
A young father just texted, "We love 900 North Michigan Avenue. I've taken my daughter there by myself. We get pictures with Santa. It's going on. The food court is great, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." What an endorsement.
Yeah, that's great. Yes, Astor Hall is another thing. A lot of people don't know that it's a fairly small business. It's our food hall. A lot of people are always looking for somewhere to escape on the avenue just to grab a quick bite to eat or take, you know, that moment to relax. Astor Hall is another great local brand that we have here for Small Business Saturday.
Alicia Scruba is the marketing and business development manager, director, boss, guru.
All of the above. Who knows anymore? We do everything here.
900 North Michigan Shops. Shop900.com if you want to see a listing. Alicia, good luck. Congratulations.
Thank you, John. Have a great holiday. Looking forward to seeing you.